Watson, we're sorry to inform you your request for a second loan has been refused. And the board of directors up in the city has instructed us to take the farm from you. We understand your problems and wish that we could help you, but the falling price of wheat's not our concern. And the cost of operation may well be rising, but the fact is that you lose more than you earn. This Saturday morning there will be an auction underneath a cold gray country sky. And while the rest of the nation is still sleeping, they'll be bidding America goodbye.
And just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, AM and FM stations all across the country and live and archived on the World Wide Web. This is hour number two of Governed America. I'm Darren Reeks. As we continue on, it continues to be the 26th of June, 2010. And we're going to be visiting with Jim Beers in just a moment. I wanted to finish this thing up that we were talking about because I think this really dovetails perfectly with some of the stuff we're going to be getting in with Jim Beers here in just a moment. Before the break, at the end of the last hour, we were talking about how the United States government basically has given this ground up, this southern Arizona ground. The drug traffickers have been steadily encroaching upon this land, taking over this land. Now they're saying it's too risky for Americans to enter. So basically, Americans are forbidden from going in there. Which is essentially, in a lot of people's thinking, this is ground we're giving up to the Mexican drug traffickers. And certainly this is an area which is a park or a wildlife refuge. And this is a real concern, listeners, as we have Border 2012. The U.S.-Mexican border region has been built, Border 2012. The EPA talks about Border 2012 on their website. It's a 62.5-mile on either side of the border area, a region they call it. It used to be called Border 21, Border Region 21. It had different names, but now it's called Border 2012. The idea, I think the strategy, and I'm not sure how Jim Beers will feel about this, maybe we'll get his take on it if he has one. I think the strategy here is to have these border areas, these environmental zones, which are going to be zones of international cooperation between the countries. And this is a way of blurring the borders. There's another article that I have from NPR, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but security worries overshadow U.S.-Mexico park plan. After more than 70 years, a project to create an international peace park between Texas and Mexico is slowly moving forward. Last month, Presidents Obama and Calderon signed a joint statement pledging both countries' interest in protecting cross-border wildlands. But worries over border security overshadow the project. Anyway, this is they already have, they say, model parks on the Canadian border. Why put these things on the border? Why do we have all this going on, ladies and gentlemen, unless what they're trying to do is create international zones of cooperation to break down our border in the name of wildlife, refuge, and management. Anyway, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we'll bring up Jim Beers. We're going to be talking about wolves today. We're going to talk about the nonsense that's going on in the environmental movement and how we have institutionalized extremism. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Stay tuned for a million.
The Grainmaker Grain Mill. Handmade goodness since 1999. handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand-operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each meal is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain mill, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain mill will be passed down through generation.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, Help, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up, protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Welcome back to the broadcast, Govern America. Jim Beers retired from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service after 30 years. He served as a wildlife biologist, a wetlands biologist, a special agent, and refuge manager. After working for the Utah Fish and Game and spending 4 years as a reserve officer in the U.S. Navy, he joined the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and was stationed in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Grand Island, Nebraska, New York City, and Washington, D.C. While in Washington, he was a Congressional Fellow, a Chief of Operations for the National Wildlife Refuge System, the Project Program Coordinator for the Animal Damage Control Program, and for his final 7 years, he was a wildlife biologist in the Central Office who served as Project Officer on nearly all National Wildlife Projects funded with Pittman-Robertson money. After spending 10 months at home with full pay and no work assignment, he accepted a caste settlement and retired in 1999. He holds a bachelor's in wildlife resources from Utah State University and a master's in public administration from the University of Northern Colorado. We're pleased to have Jim Beers back on the broadcast, and welcome back to Govern America. Jim?
Well, thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be back.
Yeah, you know, it's been a long time. I actually lost touch with you for a while, and so you went through a move and everything, so it's nice to reestablish contact. You know, I want to start here a little bit about your background for those of the listeners, because this is the first time we've been on RBN with you as a guest. And what made you go into this field of fish and wildlife? Were you a hunter or fisher? You have a love of the great outdoors, or
Well, I did. My father and my grandfather both they were German, and they both had a great appreciation for and reverence for this country's I guess freedom to hunt and fish like they were not able to do back in Germany, where everything was they didn't come directly from Germany, their parents did, but they're back where they came from, that kind of thing was denied to common people. Very rich people owned and controlled everything, and they had a great reverence for this. My father fought in the Second World War through the whole thing, and I grew up hunting and fishing. My dad got me interested in it and had friends that trapped, and I canoed a lot and just enjoyed the outdoors a great deal, and got very interested in waterfowl in particular, and where they came from and the different species and the requirements, and I just always wanted to get into that field and protect it and advance it, if you will. The idea that wildlife and fisheries are part of our society, and we're free to manage them and use them, and they're not controlled by just the rich, and people like you and me aren't denied access to them. It turns out that that's exactly what's happening today, is that more and more the government, acting on behalf of people with all kinds of other hidden agendas and ulterior motives, want to stop hunting, want to stop fishing, want to stop the practice of forestry on both public and private land. They want to shut down ranches and stop the use of forage in the management of rangelands and grasses on public lands and private lands. Mm-hmm. And they want people out of the rural areas. And with more and more government control, and ultimately reestablishing the sort of class system where people like you and I are forced to live where they say we can live, and even if we live in the country, we're going to have to put up with wolves and cougars and not use our property as we want, but as the government dictates. In other words, private property ultimately will be eliminated, and the government will dictate your use and access to and availability of both public and private property. I consider it a pretty important field to be in right now, and my little part of it, the fish and wildlife part of it, is something that's, I guess, exemplary of so many other areas, the anti-gun movement, the anti-use of public lands, wilderness proposals, and listing all kinds of plants and animals as endangered and closing them off and taking people's property without compensating them for it. It's all related.
Yeah, you know, as we progress, I want you to comment a little bit about how much of this is actually necessary and how much of it isn't, because this is, we're given so many excuses today about, well, we have to do this and we have to do that, and yet the average person doesn't understand the science, like somebody like you who's been in it for a long time. And so we have all these so-called scientists who are making all of these claims about the need to protect this and protect that. Is the ecosystem quite as fragile as they're making it sound?
No, not at all. When you and I talk about the science and the scientist, we have the assumption to begin with that there's some sort of ironclad laws out there that all of us in our society and as humans must observe, and if we don't, it's at our own peril. And that is not true. Not true. The idea that what the scientists tell us about animals and plants and the environment is something that we must listen to as though they're priests giving us God's word is silly. The information that they come up with is something that we should all put into the decision-making we do as to what kind of country, what kind of environment, what kind of town, what kind of homes and everything that we live in, and the way we treat the plants and animals around us. They're not ironclad things that we must listen to so much as they are facts, if you will, that we should take into account. And more what we consider facts are really political interpretations of things that are generated by these scientists for political and financial rewards. We've set up a system where the government pays them to tell the government what the government wants to hear. Mm. Whether we're talking about the fact that the scientists might tell us that, oh, wolves are endangered, when the same wolf that we're talking about occurs all over Canada, all over Alaska, all over Asia, and into Europe and North Africa. The idea that that's somehow important that we do things with wolves here is just plain silly. But the idea behind it is that that's a very far-reaching impact, for instance, on rural America, on livestock producers, on hunting, on gun ownership, on just simply rural economies throughout the United States. And it's people that want to destroy that that are in control of the government and in control of a lot of these agencies that see that that money is given to academics that back them up and come up with more nonsense like, oh, there's so many species of wolves and there's so many races of them and this one over here is very important and that little one over there is very important and we must, in order to save them, we must take away your property, we must close down all this public property here, we must put these ranchers out of business here and tell these people they're losing dogs and their kids are having to catch buses in cages, school buses, because the wolves are hanging around the bus stops and rural bus stops. And people just need to adapt. I could use the word insane. I could use the word anti-Christian. I could use the word anti-human. But it's all of these things wrapped up with a lot of ulterior motives and hidden agendas. And that's really what we've got to try to explain to people. So they don't send these groups money, that they don't support politicians that boast about helping them along the way and everything. It's just, it's a big problem and one that I'm devoting my life to the best I can.
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad that you mentioned earlier about the funding mechanism, because I think really this is one of the things I harp about a lot on this program, at least in the past, is grant-funded scientific research. This is a huge problem because, you know, even Agenda 21 mentions, I think it's Chapter 35, about how, you know, it's titled Science for Sustainable Development. And how do you get science to be for anything that you want it to be for, but fund it? You know, and it seems like in every field, not just ecology and not just wildlife and all this, but every field we have scientific research, quote-unquote, being controlled by the funding sources. And you really get the outcome that you want, don't you?
Oh, you certainly do. When you make available money, millions of dollars, to list species of plants and animals, the people that work for the state and federal agencies are very, very anxious to list more and more plants and animals, species, subspecies, races, populations, distinct populations, and on down the line, every kind of nonsensical term they can come up with. When you do that and put the money out there, you're not only enticing the academics with money, which means they get tenure and they get more graduate students. Think about how a biology professor at some state university somewhere who grew up with a fascination with, say, bats, and just, you know, as a kid was fascinated with them and read about them and went to school and got a degree and a bachelor's degree and decided to do his master's degree on the Eastern Indiana bat or some nonsense like that. And then he gets his Ph.D. in really a further investigation, if you will, of bats and their species in Asia or something. And then he gets to a university. He's sitting there at the department looking at the availability of funding for listing species that are endangered. Now, this guy knows more about bats than probably anybody around, and he loves bats, and I'm sure he's got the attitude in his heart that people just don't appreciate bats well enough, and it's just too bad the way we're so ignorant of bats, and, you know, if everybody knew about bats, they'd all do things for bats and all this. And he looks at that, and he says, you know, I can get part of that money, and I can also do what my whole life has been dedicated to, give bats recognition. So he comes up with the fact that there's really not just the Eastern Indiana bat, but there's the southern population of the Eastern Indiana bat that lives in the lower Appalachian Mountains, that we have indications 100 years ago there were 80 colonies of them, which is, you know, just all fictional, but he believes it, or he can put it out there without challenge because nobody can challenge it. And then he says, you know, because that now there's only 30 that we know of or something, they're about to be endangered, and the bureaucrats love this stuff. And
okay,
the politicians
right
love it.
Attention, ladies.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Here is what one satisfied customer had to say about Heart and Body Extract regarding his angina pain.
I haven't had an angina pain since I've been on it. The Heart Body Extract is just so great. I thank God that I was led to this product that's doing so much for me and that can do so much for other people.
Call to order your 2 month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Don't answer it!
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information, 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Introducing the new Go Berkey Kit, the first of its kind portable water purification system for those on the go. The new Go Berkey system has an amazing output of about a gallon an hour. Each Go Berkey Kit includes a 1-quart high-quality stainless steel system complete with a black Berkey purification element, a generic sports bottle, and a nylon carrying case. The whole kit weighs a mere 2.25 pounds. With an expected element life of around 3,000 gallons, you can refill the Go Berkey system up to an incredible 12,000 times before needing to replace the element. The new Go Berkey kit is perfect for backpacking, hiking, emergency packs, bug out bags, international travel, car emergency kits, or for your desk at home or at work. Get your Go Berkey kit today for only $139 by calling 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. The online store, it's a featured product.
All right, we're back. This is Govern America. Our guest today is Jim Beers, and he's spent 30 years with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service until he was forced out, and we'll get into that here in a little bit here, because I want to talk about some of the history and exactly what they did. He's a real environmentalist, a real person who understands the science, the real science behind all of this stuff. He's been doing it a long time, and during his tenure, he saw all these government bureaucrats and the changing of the agency and everything over the period of time. And Jim, before the break, you were talking about bats, and you were talking about how using as an example, one of these students that get in and they know a lot about bats, and I guess you're going to talk about the indoctrination. We were talking about grant funding. I don't know if you remember where you're at.
Yeah, I do. And we were talking about how a professor at some university that got a degree in bat study of bats and always liked bats would now provide the government with the information to claim that they should list the southern population in the Appalachian Mountains of eastern Indiana bats or something like that. And he provides all the information. The government loves that because they can hire more people because they've got to list more species. The bureaucrats like it because they can go home and, not the bureaucrats, but the politicians can go home when they're running for re-election and say, you know, I've supported this bat recovery thing here. Bats are very important, and I've voted for the listing of this package, and we put $2.8 million in it. That's the kind of environmentalist I am. And then when they turn around, they say, okay, we'll list it. They hire more bureaucrats who work with that professor who put together a recovery plan, which is included in this very unconstitutional practice of we can take without compensation, just have to declare that this is important to a listed species. So they list the species, put the recovery plan together, and who do you think they go to for all the update on how effective it is and everything? It's that same professor, because there isn't anybody else that's an authority on eastern Indiana bats, southern population, and the lower Appalachian Mountains. So they go about, and it doesn't cost any of them anything. They go about and say, well, that public land over on that park over there, we're going to close that down now because there's two bat caves up there. And we're going to go over here, this private property where this guy wants to build houses, he can no longer build houses here because the bats will be interfered with when they come and go from their cave. And over here, this guy's grazing is causing a lot of problems on that hillside where this bat colony is, so that's going to be critical habitat, and you can't use that property anymore. It doesn't cost them anything. Mm-hmm. So the state Fish and Wildlife agencies lose a lot of authority for the state government. The federal government has more authority over your private property over here in the pasture, my private property over here that I was going to build houses on, and they closed down the state park over here because that was an example of a place that they didn't want people around. All of that is going on with all these various species that they work the country up with. People in Los Angeles and Boston say, oh my gosh, you mean the Jim Beers lousewort is almost extinct? We've got to do whatever it takes to save that. And all those bats, you bet, whatever they've got to do over there. And all of this stuff doesn't affect them. I mean, you know, yeah. People live in the north side of Chicago or lower Manhattan or something. They love this stuff. So they vote for these guys and they want to put more money to it. And you wind up with debacles like we're having right now with wolves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, one of the things that's kind of interesting as I look at the endangered species list, I mean, last I knew there were over 1,200 so-called endangered species on this list, and I don't know how often they update the list, but, you know, some of the things that they list on here is sand fleas and preble jumping mouse. You know, I mean, there's bugs and, you know, insects, I guess, and all kinds of things. I mean, so it's like they almost add anything to this thing.
And most of the time, it's keyed into places that they want to close a dam, or they want to put farmers out of business, or they want to close down grazing. And even further, an even bigger problem with that endangered species list is that they're not species. Most of those things on there are subspecies or races or populations. They sold this whole business about, oh, we got to save the bald eagle, and we got to save the elephant, we got to save the wolf. And they've listed all of these little bitty parts of those populations to further federal authority, and actually the authority of these extreme environmental groups and extreme animal rights radicals, as well as all the people they partner with, like the anti-gun people and the anti-property rights people and the anti-constitutional people that want a central government in this country that's all-powerful, that they control, to control the rest of us from what we eat to where we live and what we can be allowed to drive and where we can be allowed to go and what we can be allowed to do.
So what you're saying is it's totally, completely an environmental control agenda. It's a control agenda which is being foisted upon us in the name of environmentalism.
No, that's correct. You were talking earlier, before I came on, I heard you talking about that no-go zone down there on the border.
Mm-hmm.
And right now there's a federal plan to declare about a third of New Mexico and Arizona as jaguar critical habitat. And there's been lawsuits to stop the building of a fence on the Mexican border because it would not allow jaguars to move freely back and forth and recover in the United States in an area that has claimed to have had jaguars historically. It's much larger than probably what they're claiming. But be that as it may, the environmentalists are cooperating with the the pro-immigration reform people that are looking for amnesty and want to keep that border open.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just another example of how the environmentalists and the animal rights people are serving their purposes here to stop that fence, but they're working with the same people you were talking about earlier.
We have a break here, Jim. We'll come back here in a moment, folks. Back with Jim Beers.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
because you can handle the truth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Don't answer it!
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Hey, this land is made, you and me.
All right, we're back. Yeah, this land is your land and my land, but it's quickly being taken away from us, ladies and gentlemen, under the name of endangered species protection, wildlife restoration, and rewilding, and a whole lot of other things, conservation easements and everything. We're visiting today with Jim Beers, who retired after 30 years with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He is a scientist. He has worked for many years. He understands how this all has come together. And Jim, you were talking before the break about the jaguars. Did you finish your thoughts on that? You said there's new jaguar areas being designated.
They're setting the groundwork for doing that. They're publishing proposed regulations, and at the same time they're proposing a new introduction of wolves into the Grand Canyon. So they've not only got wolves coming down from up in Montana and Idaho into Utah and down into Colorado through Wyoming, but now they want to put wolves in the Grand Canyon to spread up into Utah and over into Nevada and down into Arizona, where they've got wolves. Mexican wolves have been introduced now for about 10 years and are causing a great deal of problems down there. So there's a whole bunch of these agendas going on that people don't hear about. And they hear, you know, people get harmed, say in central Idaho, the elk population is collapsing, and livestock producers are going out of business because of the cost of wolves. But this stuff all happens one group at a time and one area at a time, and people don't come together over it because they're afraid that they'll be next if they do anything about it. And the government people tell them, "Oh, this is the law. You can't do anything about it. We're in charge here." Blah blah blah. And people are very intimidated by that. So
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things going on in this whole environmental area and animal rights area that have great impact on so many things, from property rights to the Constitution, the central government, and everything.
Yeah, you know, one of the questions that I have that comes to mind when you talk about wolf introduction or reintroduction, I guess it's not really reintroduction, as I read your piece, what is the native habitat for wolves? I mean, where are they normally?
Wolves are big wild dogs. They can live in the grasslands, they can live in the woods, they can live up in the mountains, they can live everywhere. Although they prefer to eat meat and fresh meat, they can eat just about anything, exactly like coyotes or the dog in your backyard right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very adaptable, and they're very, very dangerous. Not only humans, big game and livestock, and they kill dogs, they carry a lot of diseases, and all of that was pretty much overlooked and downplayed and is lied about continually in the media, even today.
Prior to the 1960s, how many, I don't even know if you would know the answer to this, but how many wolves did we have in this country?
Prior to the 1960s, let's say, I think it was probably around 1930, 35, that they got rid of the last wolves in the lower 48 states.
Oh, wow.
Okay, they got rid of all of them. They were doing that for the 200 years that we settled this country, and it wasn't just because they hated wolves or that. They knew that rabid wolves were very, very dangerous, and they knew that they couldn't have isolated farmsteads and that with wolves around. You couldn't raise sheep, you couldn't raise goats, you couldn't have calves or foals out there because the wolves would kill them. And in the winter, they're particularly a big problem, just like they are in Russia today. But be that as it may, prior to 1960, the only wolves that we really recognized in the country were in northern Minnesota. There was a couple hundred of them, a couple of packs in there. Several packs, actually. And then there was occasionally reports of wolves in western Montana that were straggling down from Canada, but people out there would kill them as quick as they could. And people in Minnesota kept them around and had a hunting season and trapping season for them. But in 1969, when they listed the wolves and the federal government claimed jurisdiction over them, they forced Minnesota to stop trapping, to stop hunting, and they made them declare that they were going to have them increase and let them go everywhere. And today, from that group, you've got wolves across northern Wisconsin and actually straggling down into Illinois occasionally and denning right near Madison, Wisconsin, right near this interstate, as a matter of fact. And you've got them spread over into the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and they've come down now. You've got two packs, as I understand it, in northern Michigan, just below the straits up there, Mackinac. And they put them in Yellowstone Park, and they're all over now western Montana, Idaho completely, and they're down straggling into Oregon and Washington and down into Utah. And Wyoming has been fighting it and trying to keep them contained, but you can't really keep them contained. You can't hunt them effectively. They don't allow trapping for them, and aerial hunting is only by government agents, and they don't allow the public to do that. So you can't really control them, and the state and the federal government cannot census them. So they make these claims, oh, there's only several hundred here in western Montana. The people that live there know there's probably at least 2,000 of them there.
Yeah, you know, that brings up another issue, and I was going to ask you about that, is how do they determine how many there actually are, and is there tampering with the numbers?
Oh, there's big tampering with it. The states of Montana and Idaho admit they can't census them. They just have indications. And Wisconsin, for the last 5 or 6, probably 10 years, I guess, they've said, oh, we can census them. We go out twice a year, I think it is, and we go down the same road, and we stop every 2 miles and get out for 5 minutes and listen for howls. And, you know, the assumption there is that the wolves are like mourning doves.
Mm-hmm.
In the spring and summer, when they come back, depending on if there's a lot of them, you'll hear more coos. And if there are fewer of them, you'll hear fewer coos. And the same with woodcock. You hear them teinting And if you hear them, a lot of calls, that means there's more of them around. If you hear fewer, there's less of them, because they tend to nest in the same areas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when you drive through those areas where those two birds are at the same time every spring and listen for 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there and 10 minutes here, you can get a coo count or a peent count, and you'll know that, oh, whether woodcock or up or down. With wolves, it has nothing to do with that. In other words, the idea that if we've got a lot of wolves around our farm this spring, that next year we're going to have the same wolves and maybe more or less hanging around the farm is just nonsense. They go 30 miles in a day.
Mm.
So they're moving all over the place. But anyway, claiming that they've got this wolf howl count, who do you think does the wolf counting? Volunteers. Who volunteers for it? Why, the young lady that works over at the Wolf Information Center and the young pre-vet guy that loves his little golden retriever and is working over here at the Wolf the Biodiversity Center for the Natural
mm-hmm.
Resources Defense Council or something.
Mm-hmm.
They're
all the environmental groups and others.
Exactly, yeah. And they go out mm-hmm. there and say, oh, well, there aren't very many wolves. We didn't hear very many wolf counts this year. So you've got a phony baloney census to begin with, and then you put these advocates in there that quite frankly, for the most part, or like most environmentalists and animal rights groups, feel justified in twisting or lying or however you want to say it, the truth, in order to attain their sort of holy end, which is a native ecosystem with biodiversity in which people don't harm animals, in which all the plants and animals that were here before the dirty Europeans came and polluted North America, etc., etc., etc. So you wind up with all this nonsense about when people are asked at a public meeting, well, why do we need wolves here? Well, we need an apex predator, which is just babbling nonsense. Or we've got to restore the native ecosystem, which is nonsense. The weather is different here. The entire landscape of North America is absolutely in no way related to what was here in 1492. But it's sort of an emotional, religious thing that at 1492, everything was so ideal and wonderful here until the Europeans came and just polluted it all. So you've got all of this hidden agendas and propaganda and nonsense that appeals to a lot of young people because the school teachers are fostering all that stuff in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And the universities are more and more getting out of the business of explaining to people how you manage forests or how you manage rangelands or how you manage fish and wildlife for people, and getting more and more into the whole agenda of, well, we've got to save everything. We've got to return it all to nature and get the people out of the rural countryside and get them into the cities where they'll live in apartments, and we'll tell them what to do and not to do, and we'll make the whole rural America just like it was in 1492. I mean, it's just crazy, crazy.
Yeah. You know, that brings up another issue, too, and I know this is something that you talk a lot about, but They banter around terms like invasive species, which sounds very ominous and everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if there ever was an invasive species, it seems to me like the wolves would be an invasive species to modern-day North America, having been reintroduced or introduced
yep.
or however you want to say it.
That's a very good observation. And when they use the term invasive species, they usually talk about think about the killer bee. Look at the Asian carp. Oh,
yeah, I was
going to
ask you
so
about
terrible.
That one, too.
But
that's the big thing here in the Great Lakes right now.
Exactly. And that's true. Those are really injurious wildlife, but whether they're native or non-native, and they should be dealt with and eliminated where they can be and everything without a lot of checks on that. They ought to be gotten rid of. But be that as it may, when they say we want federal jurisdiction for these invasive species, what they're really trying to get through is the idea that the federal government will restore the native ecosystem by eliminating any species that wasn't here by 1492. That's the magic date. That means pheasants are gone. That means rainbow trout and brown trout are gone, and brown trout everywhere, rainbow trout in a lot of places that they are today. That means that striped bass put on the West Coast will be eliminated, and you'll have these sort of high acolytes of the environmental religion out there declaiming about the fact that the chukar partridge was brought here from India and should be gotten rid of, and all this hunting and fishing, all of those Great Lakes salmon, out of here. All of those brown trout in the Great Lakes, out of here. And that they want the fishing shut down. Mm-hmm. Just like they want the hunting shut down. When you look at it, over in Europe, they don't even allow them to use hooks in a lot of places anymore to catch any fish.
Oh, wow.
And over in Australia, three of the states have already prohibited all bird hunting. So that's what they see coming here. The more power they get in the central government, and the more control they get, and the more they stack places like the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management and the Park Service with these religious acolytes and advocates of this nonsense, the more we're going to be coming to a world like that that I certainly don't want for my children. I mean, that's going back to what my great-great-grandparents fled in the old country many centuries ago and what they wrote the Constitution to prevent.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I read in some of these United Nations documents, Jim, is how they talk a lot about how we are overfishing the seas and we're doing all of this stuff to damage the oceans. How much of the oceans, I mean, it seems to me like it's, how can you say that we're overfishing the oceans when I mean, we're talking about a massive body of water. I mean, is this possible?
Well, what we did for quite a few decades recently is allowed an awful lot of international fishing to go unregulated. So the UN and even the United States National Fisheries Management Service have done a very poor job of regulating the kind of gear and the kind of electronic detection and the kind of nets and scrapes and everything else that they use to get these various fish. That is a problem. That factory fishing was allowed to go so unchecked for so long. But as we look at that, we say, okay, we're going to stop that out here in these international waters. The UN has been totally ineffective to do that. They're not capable of regulating that. But think about this. We just got through with a big 2 or 3 weeks meeting by the International Whaling Commission to stop all taking of whales and to prevent the three rogue nations, Japan, Iceland, and out Norway and Greenland from taking whales, minke whales mainly, and they don't want any humpbacks taken, any sperm whales taken, blah, 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 to save the whales. At the same time, we've stopped all harvest and use of seals in the North Atlantic and other places. So we've got seal and sea lion populations coming out our ears, where the sea lions are up in the mouth of the Columbia River eating all the salmon that run in there, as we say, oh, we've got to close the dams down here and breach them because that way we'll get spring salmon back. But they don't care about the millions of salmon being killed by these overpopulated seal populations and sea lions, and they don't care about the impact of all those toothed whales on these commercial fisheries or the effect of all of these overabundant North Atlantic seals and Southern Africa off Namibia, the seals' impact on not only commercial fish, but on things like rock lobsters and abalones and these other things. So it's all smoke and mirrors. And when I talk about this, people immediately say, oh, he just wants to kill all the whales. Not at all. We ought to be looking at the number of whales and the biomass that they represent and look at all of the fish that it takes to support that biomass and say, well, we don't want more than so many whales or so much biomass of whales off the Atlantic coast of the United States or off of Canada or Iceland at certain times of the year. And in order to do that, we're going to keep their numbers at certain levels. But we treat them as though they're sacred animals and that we can never do anything about them. And if there's too many of them, they're eating up all the commercial fish that we're trying to recover. Well, that's just nature's way, Mother Nature, blah, blah, blah. We should all just get on our knees and bow down. It's just crazy.
You know what? Crazy. One thing that I wanted to ask you too is how much of this stuff should we really even be worrying about? I mean, if a species, for instance, is endangered and it can really be determined that it's endangered, if there was a independent scientific process that wasn't funded by grant research and what have you, I guess there are measures that could be put into place to protect whatever species it is, but I suppose it would depend upon the species whether we even should even be concerned about it, or would we want to protect something like the sand flea?
Well, it gets back to your initial belief. It's almost like, are you a Republican or Democrat, a liberal or a conservative, you know, a Catholic or a Muslim? You've got this sort of core belief to begin with as you look at certain issues, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at, when I look at answering your concern there, the first thing that really pops up, which I'm not even aware of, but it is there, is do I believe that humans are more important than these plants and animals? Now, I don't...
That's a fundamental question, isn't it?
Exactly. Now,
let's hold it right there. That's a good place to take this break here.
Okay.
And when we come back, we'll deal with what's more important? You know, the ecosystem that's built for the human being, or was it built for the human being? You know, we're talking about fundamental values, aren't we, Jim?
Yep, we sure are.
We're visiting with Jim Beers. He spent 30 years with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And your phone calls are welcome, by the way. I haven't even given out the phone number once in this show. 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443 if you'd like to join in the conversation. And we'll be back in a moment after this short break. Stay with us.
Are you new to free...
Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of microplant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
All right, we got a short segment here, and we do have some callers on the line. We'll get to you in just a moment, so hang with us. Folks, the phone number is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. We still have some open lines if you want to jump on board. Now, Jim, before the break, you were just getting ready to address the fundamental question, which really is something I think that we have to face as a society, is what's more important, the issue of priorities. Did you want to go ahead and continue with your thoughts there?
Sure. We're talking about the nature of man. If you believe that man is just another animal, and a dangerous animal at that, that is pretty smart with a lot of technology and very adaptable, and is taking over and killing and ruining nature all around us, then you back up this environmental drive that says the central government should force man to be less harmful of other animals and shouldn't kill them and shouldn't cut the trees and shouldn't eat to have the grass eaten for cattle that they eat, and that man is a bad thing. In other words, the same thing that this native ecosystem business represents. But if you believe that man is a very, very special being and that there is a God and that man has an eternal life as opposed to all the plants and the animals, in other words, you're not pagan in your belief. In other words, you don't worship volcanoes or worship big old trees that have a lot of mistletoe in them like druids did or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then you look at this and you say, well, what are those wolves going to do to these farmers that work out there and live out? What about their children? What about the idea that, in fact, a lady just told me this the other day in Oregon. She, oh, Mr. Beers, the danger of your child or grandson being killed by a wolf, he's got a better chance of being hit by a car. As though that is somehow a comfort to me if I lose my child.
Yeah.
So the idea that they can manipulate our environment like they're trying to manipulate us to make the government almost treat us all like animals that they can put into this corral or put in that pasture and take and do away with when they want to, the assisted suicide and all of this other stuff and health care and abortion, and all of this is wrapped up in these attitudes towards what man is and what our society of men is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution was set up that the state and local government would allow each community to live their lives free with certain rights and in a tranquil and way that's their welfare is taken care of, their family, their children, their rural community. And what we're seeing is a dissolving of all that state and local authority and values and the imposition of a remote government's ideals, which are the ideals, pagan ideals, that, well, it's just too bad. If we put wolves there and you're killing your cattle, maybe you shouldn't be there. And if, well, just one or two kids get killed a year, well, that's a price we have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very evil agenda to people like me, and I intend to try to fight it as much as I can.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that somebody said, and I don't know who it was that first made the statement, is that when all of this stuff is in place, all of this sustainable nonsense, it's going to be the animals looking at us as we are in the cages. I mean, they're going to be free to have room to roam, and we're the ones that are going to be in the cages.
Yeah.
We got the end of the hour. Hang with us, Jim, and we have Doris in Kansas and John in Tennessee on the line. And folks, your phone calls are welcome, too. 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. We're visiting with Jim Beers. He spent 30 years with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. After he retired, he was kind of forced out of there because they don't want real biologists, wetlands biologists, and people who are actually real managers, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up a little bit later on. But stay with us as hour number three of the broadcast is about to begin.
With recent... The next...